Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The major factor in the state budget that affects most Ohioans and that drives the two-year spending plan is taxes. Governor Kasich has proposed yet another income tax cut to be offset in part by a broader and higher sales tax. We're going to talk about that and other issues at the Statehouse today on our weekly Reporters Roundtable. Joining us, Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles. Welcome, Joe.
Great to be here.
And Dick's Newspapers Statehouse Bureau Chief and also reports for the Youngstown Vindicator, Mark Kovac. Welcome, Mark. Oh,
technically, there is no more Dick's Newspapers.
I guess I work
for Gatehouse now.
So. Oh, that's right. That's right. Yep. Is that what we're calling it then?
Gatehouse Media and the Vindicator for the moment.
Gatehouse Media. Okay.
Happy to be here.
And the Vindicator. Yeah. And Gatehouse Media, it is the same company that owns the Columbus Dispatch. And Columbus Dispatch Statehouse reporter Jim Siegel. Welcome back, Jim.
Hey, you can call me Gatehouse Media, too, if you want.
So what does that mean?
Good question.
Okay. Within
a couple months, I should know. Right now, I'm doing everything the way I was doing it before and just writing for my former Dick's Papers and the Vindicator. We'll see how long that continues or what changes they make to that.
Thoughts,
Jim Siegel?
Yeah, the Dispatch, we don't know either. We're waiting to hear as well. Gatehouse often does a 90-day thing where they come in and do the big evaluation and then we'll probably hear more about how exactly all this restructuring occurs because you know, they also own the Canton Repository and a few other small papers in Ohio too. So
I mean, this was announced on a Tuesday and happened on a Wednesday, so it was all very quick. I mean, at the beginning of this month,
right?
So. Sorry,
okay.
Interrupted
no.
your intros.
Not a bit. I mean, get those corrections, you know, in the database. Okay, what are they talking about when it comes to the state budget? You know, obviously the Republicans control the system at the Statehouse, but Democrats are complaining about the state budget nonetheless. What are the big sticking points at this point, Joe Ingles?
Well, Democrats are complaining about the budget, but, you know, they're in a minority. So, I mean, they can complain all they want. Are they going to be able to affect change? Maybe a little bit, but, you know, the real change is likely to come when the House and Senate gets hold of this thing.
And they don't particularly care for it much either, right?
Right. There are elements of this budget that the House and Senate leaders have said, you know, we're going to be looking at that and trying to do something a little differently. One thing is the severance tax.
Yeah.
That has pretty much been rejected every single time that Governor Kasich has proposed it. He's proposed it again. That'll probably come out.
And this is tax on
gas and oil
taken from fracking.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that'll probably come out. There are some other things in there. The school funding piece will probably be revised. I mean, Governor Kasich, the way he has it, he's basing it on per pupil in the classroom. But the schools are saying, hey, wait, that doesn't work because a classroom of 10 is just as expensive for us as a classroom of 14, but you're taking money away. So these lawmakers, you got to remember, they come from all over the state in different areas. If their schools are hurting by, you know, this funding thing, they're likely to change that. Those are just two big areas.
Yeah, on the I would say on the. We can just focus on taxes for a moment. The governor, as Joe explained, I mean, it's about $3.1 billion in income tax cuts that the governor is proposing, offset by $3.1 billion in other tax increases. That's over both numbers over 2 years. And just in folks I'm talking to in the legislature, unlike past budgets over the last couple years, where there's definitely an interest among Republicans in cutting the income tax, I am just not getting that sense this time. I'm not even getting it from outside groups, like Chamber of Commerce and other groups. There just doesn't seem to be the great excitement of wanting to further cut the income tax right now, particularly as revenues are struggling to we continue to miss our revenue estimates in this current budget, and it's already creating a tight budget for the next 2 years. And so I really think you're going to see a lot of those tax changes come out. I do know there is an interest among some to want to reduce the number of tax brackets that we have.
From nine to five.
Nine down to five is what the governor has proposed. Mm-hmm. Five, there's nothing magical about the number five, but they would like to see it less than nine. you know, there's some argue, some try to argue that it's about making the tax code simpler. To be honest, it doesn't. It doesn't really make it any simpler.
Who cares? I mean, you figure out what bracket you're in, and then that's it.
Exactly. The simplicity of a tax reform comes when you get rid of the credits and the exemptions, which there is much less talk of doing that kind of thing. So I would expect to see wholesale changes to this tax plan. They don't want to do the tax increases. They don't want to do the tax shifting that is being done. And like I said, they just don't seem to have – I mean, look, they've cut the – Republicans have cut the income tax by 30% over the last decade. So there's just a thought that maybe it's time to focus elsewhere, particularly in areas like a massive drug epidemic that we have right now in this state and other things. So,
and for which there is no increase in funding in the proposed budget by the governor, right?
Right.
Yeah, but the governor will also point out that we're throwing $1 billion a year or whatever at this drug epidemic. And, you know, there's a lot more focus from the governor and people like Mike DeWine on saying, you know, we really have to tackle this at the local level. So trying to take that spending argument away and take a different approach to it. But on the whole budget thing, I think I'm hearing just a lot more Republicans using the phrase tax shifting than I've heard in the past. That's not usually something they hammer on. You hear that from Democrats. I also hear, I think, a lot more Republicans saying, I don't know how I can go back to my district and tell them we're going to cut your income taxes when we're also going to cut your school funding. It just seems a lot less stomachable this time around. But this was the same place we were 2 years ago, I think, with the governor who introduced a similar budget, and Republicans came in and stripped all that stuff out of it.
Yeah, yeah. And, the governor's proposed tax changes every budget,
right,
and the Republican legislature often changes it dramatically. But in the end, they've always had a pretty, at least a somewhat significant income tax cut when they were all said and done.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is because they had extra revenue to play with. They don't have extra revenue to play with this time around. They're barely getting by with what they've got. LSC, the Legislative Service Commission, usually comes up with a different revenue estimate each budget than Kasich's budget office. And this time they're not that much different. And even if you take the LSC numbers, you're not going to get a lot more money to play with here.
And one thing to remember here is we've been having these income tax cuts for many years now, and they haven't yielded the argument for an income tax cut is that, oh, it's going to trickle down, it's going to spur economic development, we're going to see new jobs and new investments. And really, they haven't amounted to that much that they have, we're not seeing that. So, the question is, do you give everyone a little bit of a income tax break, if it's not going to bring in the economic development that you want it to? And that's right. The other side of it.
Also a good point. Also a point to make there, too, is unlike when you were talking about federal income tax cuts and we're talking about federal corporate tax cuts, I mean, those are much bigger numbers. I mean, you're talking about what you can cut. The average Ohioan, and I wouldn't even, not even the average, the vast majority of Ohioans pay a state income tax rate of less than 3% right now. So when you're talking about cutting that kind of a margin, there's just not a lot of room to go where at the end of the day, you're going to end up with a lot more money in your pocket. And so that is also another issue. As Joe said, with the jobs issue, you can continue to cut the income tax and try to make yourself look competitive compared to other states, which I'm not going to say doesn't have value. It probably does. But at the end of the day, when it comes to how much can the state actually cut to impact your pocket at the end of the week, there's just not a lot of room there because we just don't pay a whole lot of state to income tax.
So if the Republicans are, not super fond of the tax cut this time, this isn't something that's really important to them, are they likewise not interested in the tax increase, the sales tax increase proposal in the governor's budget?
I think they've already indicated they're
not
interested.
Absolutely,
I mean,
not.
They're not interested in fracking.
Severance,
they weren't interested,
right,
in the cigarette tax changes last time around.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't interested in the sales tax broadening, although the governor's office this time around says, look, we kept it very narrow this time. There's, what, five or six areas they're talking about.
Interior decorating.
Lobbying or whatever. There wasn't – I think – House Speaker Cliff Rosenberger told us up front, that those kinds of things were DOA. So,
right, and there's things even there like the smaller ones. The governor wants to increase the tax on beer and wine. Let me just say the Ohio Beer and Ohio Wholesale Beer and Wine Association has long been one of the largest campaign contributors to all legislators. in the last decade plus. So good luck with that. There's just not a lot of appetite to raise a lot of taxes. It doesn't mean they won't do any of these, but there's a lot of them that are getting the plan is also getting hit from all sides. The business community right now is going after the plan as being bad. The liberal groups like Policy Matters Ohio, which does a lot of tax analysis, they're going after it as a bad plan because it directs almost all the majority of the tax breaks to the wealthier Ohioans, and so it's not a lot of appetite for I don't think for doing a lot of this.
Okay, so anybody have any appetite out there for talking about how they're going to fund the state budget for the next 2 years with the flat revenue? If not, you know, the as you mentioned, we started this out, Jim Siegel saying, "Oh, it's coming in behind." So they'll just cut something.
Well, I mean, the governor proposed a balanced budget.
Yeah, he has
so,
to.
You know, and people say, what does that mean? Well, obviously, it's based on estimates. You know, we estimate the amount it's going to come in, and then we don't allocate for any more than that to go out. But of course, that can change. Now, over the last several budgets, we've had more money at the end than we expected. Now, this budget that we're currently in, we're going to end up with less than we expected. Now, there is a cushion built in that we're going to be okay, I think, in this current year, which ends June 30th. But it does carry over in terms of the problems with the next budget and the revenue. And, I mean, it's one of those things now where you don't have a lot of money to play with. So if you're going to, say, increase money for drug treatment or increase money for school funding, you're going to have to find it from somewhere else in the budget, and it's not going to be as easy. There are some spots you can look. There is some money hiding in places like untapped funds that have kind of built up over time, but there's not a lot of that out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you look at the Medicaid issue, yeah. That's still in flux at the federal level. That we've expanded the Medicaid in Ohio to low-income Ohioans. A lot of people have been able to take advantage of that, and they're now on it. Governor Kasich's plan, I think it's $25. Is that what it is? It proposes charging a little bit. A little bit each month to some of those newly added families who are on the upper end of the scale. And lawmakers have said in the past that they actually, the Republican lawmakers, a lot of them actually like that idea of that cost sharing on the Medicaid expansion. So I think that's one place that they might actually leave it alone or, you know, even hike it a bit. I don't know what they'll do, but I don't think they'll fight that.
There are other policy things, you know, they start to emerge. They, you know, people start to pick apart the budget, proposed budget. And one of them is teachers and requiring them. Is this in the budget that requires them to do sort of like an internship with a local business?
An externship.
Externship.
With a local business. Yes.
Tell us exactly what it says they're supposed to do and why.
In order to be recertified, keep their certification, they have to do some things in order to do that. And now Governor Kasich is saying, well, I want you teachers, I want you to go out and I want you to shadow businesses in your area. And then
Burger King or something?
I don't know. It doesn't really specify which business they have to, you know. And, you know, that's a great question. In some of these areas, there's not a lot of business that you'd want to shadow. So I'm not quite sure how they would do that. But the idea is for teachers to find out what businesses need and then go back to their classrooms and try to teach that. But, you know, teachers are highly insulted by this because they, quite frankly, they think lawmakers should go into their classrooms and see what they're dealing with before they propose something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, the governor's big thing is our schools aren't preparing our kids for careers that are available in the state or emerging in the state. And so, you know, he has a proposal to put some non-voting business people on
school boards,
you know, and so he wants lots more.
Right.
He wants kids to get out, you know, and instead of learning Latin, he wants them to go out and work on a car in the garage or whatever, you know, whatever they want to do with what they're interested in to kind of build up some of those career skills as they move through the school system. That said, I mean, a couple school teachers approached me over the weekend, like, what in the world is that? And I just have a hard time believing lawmakers are going to leave that in there.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I would be pretty surprised if they did. And frankly, I mean, again, it's another, you know, we want to add another requirement for teachers here. And I don't know. I mean, at this, you know, we're not paying them anymore. I mean, that, you know, in terms of, you know, we, I mean, they get pay raises, but it's not like, I don't know. This seems like at some point you got to think, how much are we going, we asking of teachers to do in these circumstances for what we pay them? And I'm not arguing that we don't pay them enough, but I'm just saying that it, you know, it's not like anybody's out there getting wealthy,
hey,
and
know,
being a teacher.
I mean, everybody knows a teacher now who works a second job.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, and this is, I mean, look, Governor Kasich holds business owners in very high esteem as a group. And so he believes that they can bring things to the table that others, you know, that can help with the education system. But I just wonder, you know, we're still talking about high school here. And at what point are you, you know, I'm sure there are things that can be changed, but you also wonder how much can you really do in high school to get kids ready for careers that are ever more advancing in the knowledge and skills that you need to know. I mean, if you're not going to teach Algebra 2 a whole lot differently, I think, because you went out to a local company and saw how they're manufacturing widgets or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just wonder, you know, how this applies, you know, practically in the classroom.
I think, I mean, the governor, that's true. I think the governor has a legitimate point in that, though. I mean, I think what he said when he's doing his spiel on this, which we hear every time we hear him speak at this point, is, you know, get the kid into the company so that they can understand why they're learning Algebra 2.
Not the teacher.
Yeah, that's the kid and not the teacher. But, I mean, to his point, you've got kids graduating from high school, going to college who aren't ready for college. You've got kids graduating from college with degrees and subject areas that they're not going to find jobs in, and they're hampered by, what, tens of thousands of dollars in debt. Mm-hmm. I think that's what the governor's trying to hit at. Now, forcing teachers to go out to companies as part of an externship to try to get a better grasp on the careers that are out there, I don't know that that's going to do it.
You know, the thing is, you can't take this problem in one piece. You know, focusing on the teachers, that's just one little small piece of it. And you've got kids out there that aren't even in school half the time because they're, you know, maybe they have issues of poverty or drug abuse in their family or whatever the issue is. There are a lot of kids who are not making it due to factors that have absolutely nothing to do with the school they attend. Mm-hmm. So you've got to, you know, that's something that you got to look at. You also have to look at this whole issue of, you know, you've got parents, everyone thinks their child's a genius. Everyone's kid is a genius, you know. So parents, you know, when you're steering your kid, you very few parents I've ever heard say, oh, you know, Johnny, maybe you ought to go into heating and air conditioning, or maybe you ought to go into mechanics or something, even though that might have jobs there and good paying jobs. I mean, if you've paid for those services, you know they're good paying. But the thing is that parents always steer their kids toward college. And if you've got that mindset, that's part of it, too.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about what's going on at the State House today with our weekly reporters roundtable. Still with us is Joe Engels of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau and Mark Kovac. He covers the Ohio State House for Gatehouse Media, and Jim Siegel, State House reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We've been talking about a requirement put in Governor Kasich's budget that would require teachers to do externships, that is, spend a day in a business to figure out and glean something about what kids need to know when they graduate from high school, as far as what kind of skills they need, and maybe help gear them in that direction. It's unlikely to remain in the budget. A lot of the budget's unlikely to remain after the Ohio General Assembly gets through with it. So it signaled that they're not interested in more tax cuts necessarily, certainly not interested in sales tax increases. blah, blah, blah. So what is happening? What will happen at the Ohio General Assembly in over the next couple years? What do we get? Jim, House GOP leaders are planning, are working on a the Ohio Pastor Protection Act. This is in response to the Supreme Court of the United States ruling on gay marriage or same-sex marriage, I guess we should say. What does Ohio need a Pastor Protection Act for?
I don't know. I'll be honest. I don't know.
Had people...
And even this, you know, I asked the Speaker of the House that question because the Speaker indicated, and actually Mark was there too, asking it at the same time. We were asking, okay, what's going to happen? He indicated the bill was probably going to move, and the questions were, okay, well, why? What? Because this same bill, which basically says that ensures that pastors do not have to perform gay marriages if they don't want to. And protects them with – gives them legal protections so you can't sue them for refusing. And, you know, I asked, well, why do we need this? And the answer was now, you know, from the Speaker, it was like, well, we just want to kind of reiterate what the protection's already in the Constitution. I'm like, well, if it's already in the Constitution, why do you need a law? Because the Constitution is much stronger than a law.
Uh-huh.
And the general answer was because people want it in my caucus. And uh-huh. So there – I mean – There's a faction of Republicans in the House and probably the Senate as well who would like to see this passed. I think it's more of a statement bill than anything else, but it does offend some in the LGBT community, and not that that would surprise anyone who knows that community that they would probably be offended by this, and so it's they may move it. I'm not sure it has a whole lot of practical effect. I'm not sure I know of too many people who would want to go and force a pastor to marry them who didn't want to. So we'll see.
I posted shaky video of that exchange with the Speaker,
yeah.
Ohio Capitol blog on YouTube, if you want to go in and listen, because I think Jim asked, you know, well, do you know of any other thing that we do this with where it's already in the Constitution? And it was an interesting response, I guess, if you want to go back and watch it.
Yeah, he does. I mean, look, Cliff Rosenberger didn't support this last session.
Right.
He still doesn't support it. But look, he's not, you know, he's not a one-man show. He's got members who want it passed. Apparently enough of them have indicated they would like to see it passed. They think they've narrowed it down enough so that it doesn't cause any damage. And so they're, you know, at least the House is probably going to move it. And, you know, again, I just don't know how much practical impact it's really going to have. I mean, there's never been a lawsuit filed in Ohio that under these kind of grounds.
Right.
I think it's slated for a vote tomorrow. Possible vote in, is it Community and Family Advancement? I think they meet at 9 in the morning or something.
So out of committee.
Potentially out of committee. And I think the Speaker indicated to us last week, you know, we'll talk about it in caucus on Tuesday and see what we're going to do. So it looks like it's going to move in the House. Okay.
Yeah, but as they're saying, it really doesn't do much of anything other than satisfy a political checkmark for some lawmakers who have, you know, promised to take the more conservative line when it comes to gay rights and that sort of thing.
I think a year ago, I mean, at least the evangelicals I hang out with, you know, there was a lot more fear about what was going to happen on the U.S. Supreme Court and where issues like this would go. I don't know if there's that same kind of fear at this point with the president that we have. And so I don't know why this is still a fast track type bill, although there's just a lot of fear out there that this is going to happen among evangelicals.
So. OK, here's something that affects a lot of people. There's a measure that's been introduced that would address nurse to patient ratios in Ohio hospitals. Joe Engels, you wrote about this. What's going on there?
Well, basically what the bill would do is it would set some standards that aren't in place now for how many registered nurses, how many patients they could have at any one time. And the idea is being pushed by a National Nurses Association. The registered nurses in that association say that work in hospitals say that they have too many patients. Some of them say they can't get bathroom breaks, they can't get lunch breaks, and they feel like it's easy to make mistakes or not give good quality care because there's so many patients per ratio to registered nurses. Now, we're talking registered nurses, not LPNs, not medical aides and all that. And so the legislation would basically set a standard and all the hospitals would have to adhere to those standards. But when you talk to the Ohio Hospital Association, they say that there are already standards. They're just kind of being set by the hospitals and by the committees that oversee their staffing there, which includes nurses. And they say they don't think that this is a legitimate thing that needs to happen. They think actually it could be a bad thing because they, as they point out, they say, you know, different registered nurses have different skill levels. So if you assume that each nurse is the same, each registered nurse is the same, you might overburden some nurses who are, you know, maybe don't have the skill level of the more experienced nurse. So there's a lot of debate there. At this point, though, it's the bill is just Democrats backing it right now. And, you know, majority Republicans haven't signed on to it yet. So we'll
now,
see where it goes.
California has a ratio rule.
They do have a ratio rule. And the nurses and the people backing this bill point to California as a place where it's working. And they say, you know, look at how well it works there. We should do it here. So
there is talk that the right to work bill is going to make a showing in the Ohio General Assembly. There's still the billboards up saying right to work is a lie. But Senate Bill 5, you know, but six, eight years ago. Was it 6 years ago now? 7 years ago?
2010, is that right?
7 years ago? Yeah.
Yep.
Introduced by the governor and the Ohio General Assembly, passed, but then was struck down by the voters on a referendum. What's the chance for this year?
We've had right to work introduced, I think, every General Assembly.
Year.
It
right.
always comes up.
Right. Anything different this time around?
We talked to the speaker about it last week. My feeling is I don't think there's much of a stomach for it among the Republican leaders. I mean, what I've heard multiple Republican members say at this point is, yes, it's going to be introduced. Yes, they're going to get a hearing. Ultimately, this is something that's going to have to be decided at the ballot box. And so, I mean, we have Representative John Becker, who introduced a public employees, a right to work bill for public employees. I think we've got, is it Tom Brinkman getting ready to introduce one for private employers? Is that right?
Yeah.
Nobody's shaking their head.
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure.
I think I saw that on the internet, so it must be true.
I'd say Brinkman or Hood.
I thought Brinkman was going to bring it up. But, I mean, it comes up. It gets a hearing. The first hearing, usually the room is packed with union members to show that they don't support it. There's a whole lot of statements coming out against it. Ultimately, I don't see why the General Assembly at this point would pick that bill up, given what happened with Senate Bill 5.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, look, here's the things to know here about this are – the governor does not support this right now.
Right.
I mean, he just doesn't think it's necessary and doesn't want to take another, you know, butt cleaning kicking like he did back in 2010 on Senate Bill 5. And the other thing to note, yes, Republicans very strongly control both chambers of the legislature. What people need to know, though, is that the unions in this state have made a very concerted effort over the last maybe 4 to 6 years at distributing their campaign contributions much more evenly or, in a number of cases, more heavily toward Republicans, knowing that Republican control was not going to go away anytime soon in the mm-hmm. statehouse. In fact, it's only gotten stronger.
Right.
The Republicans now are not – this is not the big anti-union Republican crowd in the legislature that maybe we saw in 2010. I think these unions have been smarter about the way they've done things. They've gone in and sat down with a lot of these members and talked to them because, you know, and the contributions help as well in getting access. And they've been able to explain why this is really not the thing that the state needs, that there's many other pressing issues in terms of job creation that are more important. And frankly, there are a handful of pretty influential Republicans who are pro-union. I mean, there's a Senator Tom Patton, now Representative Tom Patton, who is in the House leadership. Senator Scott Olslager, who is the chairman of the House or Senate Finance Committee. There's others who are pro-union. And like I said, they've also done a good job at building support among both parties mm-hmm. and the unions have. And it's kind of tamping down the right to work talk among most of the leadership in the legislature.
Yeah, if you look at just the most recent election, the unions were, a lot of them were backing Rob Portman, and they were, you know, even backing Trump President Trump. So, I mean, you're seeing this, the union members. It used to be all the unions went to the Democrats, you know, and that's not the case anymore. There's still a lot of union support among Democrats, don't get me wrong. But it seems like it's migrating somewhat, and that does seem to be coinciding with the same point in time where Republicans are less, you know, not banging that drum as hard.
And then I'll also say that I do believe that if a right to work bill were to move, I do think the more likely version, in which we haven't seen yet, but I know is brewing, would be one that would allow cities to do right to work on their own. If they choose.
You mean give local control to cities?
Yes. Allow,
okay.
Well,
wow, what a.
We're always about local control until we're not.
No,
right. So that, you know, somehow giving it making it a local decision whether or not to enact a right to work, that to me seems more possible. But I'm not even sure that is a likely option.
I was just going to say that the unions are so well organized, as they would be because they're unions. But I mean, if someone just whispers right to work at the state house, they're suddenly out in force, making it known that, you know, you even try this and we're going to be all over it like we were, you know, six years ago. So it just seems like, you know, the warning's there. If you want this to go through, you better take it to the ballot. Somebody should.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Coming up, I want to talk about the enemy of the state. The American people, the media. So stay tuned. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We are going to turn our sights now on the job we do briefly. I mean, I think we can't not talk about what happened. I guess it was on Friday when the president was in Florida and he referred to the media as the enemy of the American people. And that just set off another firestorm. And you know, I just feel I don't think we've ever talked so much about the media and an office holder before ever. But there was the tweet about what happened in Sweden, and there are a lot of people out there who still believe something happened.
Happen in Sweden.
Well, nothing happened in Sweden, by the way. But a lot of people out there who think something happened and think that now that the media is trying to cover it up, and this is a weird place to be. Does it change? Do you guys feel at the state house level that it changes what you do? Do you get pushback from people?
I got to say, most of the state lawmakers have been very respectful of the media. And we have a good rapport in our shop with the state lawmakers and Governor Kasich. They've been we're not treated like the national media is. At least that's my experience.
And Governor Kasich,
them.
By the way, did say on national television, I think, that right. You know, he respects the media.
Everybody's so complimentary of us at the state house level at this point.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
The governor and these other statewides are getting up talking about how important we are.
They've never been so nice.
You know, go back 6 years and see if they were saying that kind of thing about
Although,
us.
I've got to tell you, one state lawmaker the other day when President Trump was going after the media, one state lawmaker said, you know, President Trump ought to write a lesson for lawmakers on how to deal with the media. He's, you know, he's great, blah, blah, blah. So I think there are some state lawmakers who really get tired of the media and, you know, they feel like we control messages or whatever. But, you know, I think for the most part, we're well respected there.
Mm-hmm. How does it make you feel?
Oh, I don't sweat too much what Donald Trump has to say about us. I mean, look, I mean, from my perspective, I mean, My youngest son is a big fan of WWE wrestling. WWE wrestling is run by Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon is a very good friend of Donald Trump. One of the big things is when you're scripting wrestling is you need heels who are the bad guys and faces who are the good guys. The good guys need the bad guys and the bad guys need the good guys in order to make good storylines. Donald Trump needs a bad guy. Donald Trump has decided that Putin is not a bad guy, so he can't fight with him. I mean, fighting with North Korea is kind of like, you know, somebody beating up on your little brother. So he needs a bad guy in order to, you know, to further his goals. And he's created the media as the bad guy, and he's decided that he's going to just continuously attack the press as a way to try to distract people from other things that are happening to further his own goals. But if you just listen to the words he says, very little of it is like there's no substance behind what he says. He says it's fake news, and then he doesn't say what. Feel free to point out all the specifics that are fake. Don't just say because they say my administration is running badly, that's fake news, because it's not. Well, okay, great. So you say it's not running badly. When we've got a dozen sources in your side, your White House, that say it is. But you know, go ahead and point out what's fake and what's bad. He doesn't. Like, most of it is just, to me, it's like watching WWE. It's like watching wrestling without the tights. Thank goodness. I don't know that there's a lot behind what he's saying and a lot that he's going to do about it.
But there could be a silver lining if we continue on your wrestling analogy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because last week marked the death of George the Animal Steel.
That's right.
For a long time, George the Animal Steel was a hated wrestler, you know, who would bite open the turnbuckle and slam people's heads into it. But in the latter years of his wrestling career, he became beloved, right?
Yeah.
He became the hero of wrestling.
Uh-huh.
And so I would say perhaps Donald Trump is setting us up as the media to become that hero as part of his administration moving forward.
Interesting.
I don't know about George the Animal Steel. I think the danger here, though, is those of us in the media, we need to continue to do what we do, unaffected by Donald Trump, and, you know, just continue to be out there and make the point that we are not fake news. We are not enemies of the American people or whatever, you know, we're called. And we just need to do what we do because we do it pretty well. And I think most reporters really work hard to be honest, to really get to the bottom of a story and to do a good job. And we need to remember that and just, you know, not let him deflect, you know, whatever he's trying to put out there. Don't let it, you know, absorb us. And I think that's really, I think there's a lot of people in the audience, a lot of voters, a lot of American people who think it's a bunch of hooey too, because they, you know, subscribe to the fact that they think the media provides a valuable service. So, where this is resonating, I think, is a pretty small number of people.
I think the danger for people like us who cover the State House is it draws even more attention away from what we're writing about and what's going on at the state level.
Right.
And so while we're in a busy budget time with stuff that's going to affect people's lives like taxes and that kind of thing at the local level, all anybody wants to talk to with me about is Donald Trump. Why did Trump say this? Why did he do this? I think there's a danger there in shifting the focus off of some of the stuff that we're writing about that's important and putting on it something else.
Yeah, which has always been a struggle, even though things that happen at the State House level are what affect people day in and day out more than anything else.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. The State House is where people don't realize it. That's where 80% of the laws that are passed that affect your life come out of the State House, not Congress, which is lucky to pass 80 laws a year the way they go. I guess – and also my perspective too is that – I mean my concern is are we lowering the bar too much in terms of what we should the baseline expectations of how a president should act? Not in what he says, not in his ideological views necessarily about, you know, what he thinks of guns and abortions and taxes, but, you know, a basic sense of, you know, how should a president conduct himself as president? And I fear that we're somehow, by accepting Donald Trump, we're really lowering that bar to a bad place that we're going to start to really be seen worldwide as being much less than what we are, and it's not going to be a good thing. And I worry about that. And I also, you know, and to me, the more than the attacks on the media, my concern more is a blatant hypocrisy and false statements you see out of the president. I mean, he repeatedly tweeted years ago about Obama playing golf and too much, you know, instead of being president. Well, Donald Trump has now played golf 6 times in his first 4 weeks. You know, we talked. He He criticized Obama for using Air Force One for political events. He then flew down Friday on Air Force One for a political event down to Florida. He criticized Obama for the security cost. Trump has already spent more on security in a month than about what Obama would average in a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so he makes up statistics. He makes up events like what happened in Sweden.
Nothing, by the way. Nothing, right. Nothing happened in Sweden.
And so these are the things. And if people are just willing to dismiss all of that, again, it to me, it's like, well, what is the basic standard we are holding our president to? And I just not sure what it is. And is partisan politics is party labeling that strong of a drug that we are willing to avoid all else in order to stay addicted to that?
You know, and that's the thing, Ann. I mean, it seems to be a pattern here with President Trump. He comes out and he dangles the shiny thing and says the outrageous thing that gets all the coverage because it is outrageous and people pick up on it. But we still don't have answers about the ties to the Russian government. We still don't know how deep that goes and what was going on there. We're not getting those answers, and we're not getting those answers. But he's also, in the context of denying him, he's also throwing out massacres or wars or conflicts that didn't exist and bashing the media and saying 100 other things that get all kinds of attention. And so when you hear people talk about, you know, Donald Trump, what they're talking about, or what, you know, the Twitter sphere is about, is some of these ancillary things and not the real issues mm-hmm. that need to be addressed.
Lisa in Pickerington, you're on the air. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I just wanted to ask a question about, you're talking about the low bar for Trump and you're so concerned about being attacked as the media. My question is it hypocritical to lie on the campaign trail and say that health care is going to be, you're not going to lose your doctor, I'm going to save you $2,500 a year? Is that a good bar for president? I'm just curious.
Is that a good bar? Well, no. I mean, you shouldn't, you know, obviously President Obama should not have been saying things about the Affordable Care Act that weren't going to be true. And I think he overpromised a lot. I think there was a misunderstanding about what the Affordable Care Act would ultimately do and how it would work. And no, that's not right either.
But we may be seeing President Trump overpromising on that same thing because we don't know the health care plan yet. But we have seen what's coming out from Paul Ryan, House Speaker Paul Ryan, and it looks like it might not be this answer that President Trump
better
put out
there. Better
and cheaper
promise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, it's, I guess Lisa's pointing out that everybody lies. Everybody makes stuff up, I guess. It's true. I mean, that's been shown that politicians lie.
Yeah, but I think that what the shiny thing I was talking about was, you know, massacres that don't exist or things that never happened or, you know, that kind of stuff is the, you know, when I referred to shiny things, that's mm-hmm. what I was talking about.
Okay. Lisa, thanks a lot for that call. 614-292-8513 if you have a question or comment for our panel. So what is – I'm wondering to what extent what is or isn't happening in Washington affects what lawmakers are grappling with here in Ohio. Is this an issue? I mean, we're still waiting to find out. I mean, when it comes to Medicaid and the Medicaid expansion and the impact that will have on Ohio if they put the kibosh on that, what else are they waiting to come down the pike? Are there issues that need to be resolved at the federal level so state lawmakers can get their job done?
Well, that's the biggest one. Medicaid is the biggest one right now. But yeah, there are other issues that they're waiting to see how things pan out. But, you know, the Supreme Court, everyone's looking at that because we have a lot of things here in Ohio that on issues that could be run up to the Supreme Court. And if that changes drastically, mm-hmm. That could have an effect. There are other things that have an effect here, but I think Medicaid is far and away the one that everyone's watching right now because it could really impact Ohio's budget significantly.
Right. Any other thoughts?
Well, things like we talked about the Pastor Protection Act and those kinds of bills, I think you see movement on those things more now than you may have last session, just based on the climate in Washington and kind of the way people are moving. You're already seeing, you know, the impact of Trump on something like our coming U.S. Senate race with Treasurer Josh Mandel using a lot of the same rhetoric that Trump uses. So, I mean, obviously, Trump is and that movement, I guess, if you want to call it that, is bleeding into what's going on in the Ohio State House. That's happening.
Okay, so what's happening this week that you guys are covering?
Transportation budget, one of several budgets, not the main operating budget, but the transportation budget, which handles
anything.
They're supposed to amend it, sub bill. We might see a vote on it. They have to move that out by April to be in place by the construction season, I think, at the beginning of the fiscal year.
Actually, thought it started last week, but if you're talking about weather. No.
I'm just talking about the money being available come summer. So I know there's movement on that. Pastor Protection Act, which we talked about, is slated for a possible vote tomorrow. I don't even know. Are the House and Senate in session this week? Have they canceled?
No, I think they're in each
Wednesday.
Each in one
maybe?
Day. Yeah. So, but yeah, I think. No, I think that's, you know.
Those are the big ones.
Those are the big ones. The transportation budget. We'll see if they come up with any different tax ideas on transportation. There continues to be concerns raised that the state simply is not raising enough money in the gas tax to cover its infrastructure costs, and we'll see if they do anything to change that. I know there's been discussions about it.
Mm-hmm. What can they do? Just raise the tax, gas tax?
You know, there's been a lot of talk about, now I can't remember the name of it, but the restructuring the taxes based on usage and how you know, those who use the roads more would pay more or something like that. It was kind of a restructuring of taxes. But I don't know. That could come back, but that hasn't had support in the past. There's all kinds of things they could look at. They could look at added fees, you know, for driving or getting your license or whatever. There's all kinds of possibilities.
President Trump had talked about, campaigned at it, and has talked about it since he took office, an infrastructure, you know, project, you know, nationwide.
Right.
I would imagine that could have some impact on what the states do.
Yeah.
Well, it could, but not. Money. It won't have an impact on these budgets now.
Yeah.
That's probably too far out into the future and too unknown to really base anything on at this point.
And the governor is having giving his State of the State address in April, which is the latest ever.
No, because he gave it last year in April, 2 days later than this year's, I think.
Oh, okay.
So this the second latest, I believe.
Right, okay. It's the second latest.
Up in Sandusky
What's
on April.
What's going on with that? Oh, is it? I know. We talked about that last week, that it's travel issues, and it's hard in February when it's 65 degrees out to get everybody where they need to go, or at least I'm just joking. You can't depend on the weather.
It used to be that they had it at the State House. So everyone came to the State House and they had it in the end of like the 1st of February, somewhere around there. And even like as early as the end of January. But I think, you know, the unfortunate thing is we've been sitting here talking about Governor Kasich's budget for what, 2-3 weeks now? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the State of the State is where he sells that budget.
It doesn't seem like he's very interested in doing that.
He's not selling the budget when he's waiting until April to get out there in front of the people.
Because half the work's been done by then.
Right. Well, yeah. And the House and Senate's already, you know, working on it and how they're going to fix theirs or do theirs. So, I mean, that's you know, you're not getting that right now.
I think the bigger underlying implication of going to Sandusky this year, instead of next year when it's their bicentennial, when they wanted him to come, is that next year he'll come back and do his final State of the State at the State House.
Yeah, I know there is a ongoing fight that continued that happened this year. Let's just say there are legislators and legislative leaders who really they're done with the
traveling.
It was fine for a while. They did it for a number of years. Now they're like, okay, let's just bring it back to the State House.
It's expensive and time consuming,
and during a very busy part of the year for them.
Exactly. Right. So they're going to press, I believe, that he and potentially even insist that he hold his next one at the State House. Although
it will be his last.
I've already heard that he's pushing back against that. So
I may be wrong, but I thought the Toledo Blade already reported that Sandusky officials were told that he was going to be back at the State House next year, and that's why he wouldn't do it on the road. I think the Toledo Blade reported that. I could be wrong. Once again, can't believe everything you read.
Right. Mark Kovac of Gatehouse News at the Ohio State House. Thanks for joining us today.
Happy President's Day.
And Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks to you.
Thanks for having me.
And Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch, also owned by Gatehouse Media.
Thanks. Yes, always fun. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.